Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. My, oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Well, we just talked about how it's going to be a heavy culch episode.
I think we are saturated mm-hmm. to the point of crystallization.
I'm bloating with culch.
Absolutely. I think you put a little seed crystal in, mm-hmm. the whole beaker turns into solid crystal, a lattice.
Do you think my face looks fat with culch?
Absolutely. I think you are, what's the word?
A birthday boy.
A birthday boy. Oh, you guys, it's Matt's birthday today on this day of recording.
Yeah.
March 5th.
It's the 5th of March.
March 5th, 2018.
But Matt, this will be released on the March of 7th.
Absolutely. Matt, how does it feel to be 28?
Today has been a day of ups and downs.
Okay.
Mostly because of all the culture that's happening.
And culture will always take you up and take you down. I think this is our number one most cultured guest that we've had.
And in fact, so cultured that it is in their job title.
Absolutely. Let's go through the credits, bitch.
And we, in fact, have also, and this is another credit.
Yeah.
We've deemed this person so, one of such cultural expertise.
One.
That they were a judge on our culture war.
Absolutely. And they were the essential force.
Yes.
The essential locus of that judging panel. Because then you had Michelle Collins and Joel Kim Booster, who are just loose cannons.
Really just goof-offs.
But this person just legitimized the whole affair, I would
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely. I would say that they brought the gravitas.
Absolutely.
Let's... And it's rule number 74 of culture.
You gotta bring the gravitas. Let's go through the credits. He is the culture editor at Esquire.
You ever heard of it, bitch?
Bitch. Esquire? I was like...
Gagged.
Loved GQ, but I was always an Esquire boy in my teens.
Wow, controversial.
And then in college, we refused to subscribe to GQ. I do love GQ. Gotta say I love GQ. But Esquire
You don't
was,
gotta say it.
Well, I gotta say it. But Esquire was the one that we got every month.
I feel that they both, like, talk about being really stylish, but Esquire is really stylish.
But Esquire actually came out with, like, the actual primers, what, however you want to pronounce it, on
Prime.
Style. Premaze. Culture editor at Esquire. Mm-hmm. He is also, as you mentioned, former judge at Culture War.
Yes.
Perhaps future judge at Culture War.
Wow,
if we do another installment.
He'll be returning.
Maybe we'll ask him back.
Maybe.
And also
we'll see how this goes.
You loved him. I loved him in the Seminal web series.
Seminal.
Disappointing Gay Best Friend. Because he taught us that there are other models of gay best friendship.
Yeah, you don't have to be supportive.
You don't have to be supportive. You can just be like, no, let's stay in.
Nope.
Which I for real and appreciate this. Because,
yeah.
No, we'll get into this. Because this was around the same time as like that great guy at Second City who did all the...
What are you doing?
That guy who was... You just need that.
What was that? The Shakespeare?
The gay best friend, basically.
Yeah, okay.
But this, he was the perfect counterweight.
I love it.
To our guest. So please welcome Tyler Coates.
Thank you.
Hi, Tyler.
I'm so excited to be here.
Do you feel like there is a heavy expectation now that we've called you our most cultured guest?
Yeah, I do feel a little.
That's okay.
I don't know.
Cards are stacked against me either way. We'll see how they fall. I don't know.
I think the cards are stacked
perfectly.
Perfectly. Okay.
It's a full house.
It's a full house.
Yeah.
It's a full house.
Do you know poker? Because we don't.
No.
Okay. You speak for me like,
do you?
And you sound very stupid when you say that I don't know poker.
Honey, do you know poker?
I did at one time.
There you
when
go.
When I was doing my straight drag in high school.
Like Texas Hold'em?
Yep. Like Texas Hold'em. I even have a poker set.
Oh. Wow.
Deep in the annals of my room somewhere.
Okay, deep in the annals.
The chips will fall.
Tyler, what would you say was your most... you know, cishet performative element as a boy growing up in Virginia?
Virginia, very tiny town in Virginia. I don't know, like Dave Matthews Band?
Oh, that's it. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. 100%.
Which, when I was in high school, no one liked, they thought it was too weird.
Because I feel like, I feel like the Dave Matthews Band ship, the window was very small. Mm. It was, I don't know, I would say it was like early to late 90s.
Yeah.
And then, I really like that one song. You got your ball, you got your chain, tied to me, tie me up again. I kind of think that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Crash Into Me, is that?
Yeah, Lady Bird just legitimized it.
There you go.
Wait, was it a...
It was deeply in Lady Bird. Yes. Deeply.
So much so that I hoped that if she had won the Oscar, they would have just played that with the orchestra.
That, as she walks into me. As she walks up, crash into me, as she leaves Crimea River. Actually, I think I read this, that she had to ask permission
Greta.
Of everyone that she used their music, and she published her letters that she had written to all of them.
I saw the one about Justin Timberlake.
And then there was another one, I think maybe it was Alanis Morissette. I could be making that
someone,
up.
Someone,
a female artist, it was.
But Dave Matthews Band, I feel like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like you flew under the radar.
Leonard Skinner, like classic rock shit.
Okay, sure. We all did that.
Yeah.
When I was on like the cross-country bus to track meets, they would all listen to... You know, actually, this is pretty queer. They listened to Bohemian Rhapsody on repeat. And I felt like a part of it. But it was all these straight men like screaming it. And I was like, there's something deeply gay about this. And I don't just mean all of the men like, or young men orgasmically screaming together to like a, what is really a pop hook.
Yeah.
There was something else going on.
Got it.
It was Queen. It was Freddie.
It was Queen.
Yeah.
I want to say that I put out a little feeler in my Facebook group for my high school reunion. I said, who's gay now?
Yeah, I saw you post this.
No one responded.
Yeah, that's because they're still ashamed.
I even went to the Facebook group to see, because I saw that, and nothing.
Except for Robbie Craddock, but he commented, was then, still am now, LOL. And I was like, high five, Robbie. Uh-huh. We never really crossed paths that much, but Robbie is out there.
Maybe at the reunion.
Here's the thing. Our class president is nowhere to be found.
Oh my God.
Zach Glenn. I hope he's doing okay. I genuinely hope he's doing okay. But no one can reach out to him. So then these people are just very haphazardly planning it for like someone put up a poll that was like, what months work? August, April, these months that I would never be home for.
That is not going to happen. Reunion's not happening.
It's not happening. I feel like they have to be legitimized by the class president organizing, and they have to be like around Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think it's going to happen. And then I saw one thing where it was like, let's do a picnic in the summer. And if for those of us who have kids, to bring our kids. And I'm I don't know if I want to go to that then. Right?
No. I think the odds of me going are sort of 50-50, because my class president was a close friend of mine that I still am friends with, Sam.
Okay.
But I don't know what she's doing. If she organizes it, if she gets her shit together, then I'll go, because I know that all my friends will be there.
Right.
But if it's organized by like, who the fuck knows?
Sure.
Then I'm not going.
Did you go to your tenure?
No. There wasn't even one. I don't know. I mean,
you were not in touch with it.
No, I mean, well, I grew up in a very, very small town, so most people stay.
Got it.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I can go home for Christmas and see someone at the Food Lion. I'll be like, hey, you're okay, cool.
Wow, Food Lion.
The Food Lion.
The Food Lion.
The Food Lion.
Yes.
I thought you meant the Food Lion, like, you know, the line for the food.
It's the Food Lion. You're lying about it.
Where in Virginia?
It's a tiny town called Montrose.
Ooh, I love
like
it.
300 people.
Oh
my
shit.
My parents are both from there, at least. Two grandparents are from there. Like, it's an hour from Richmond, Fredericksburg, to like an hour from anything.
So you're one of the first to leave Montrose.
I'm probably the first. Yeah. My mother went to college an hour away and went right back.
I see.
Oh, well, see, reminds me of the song Merry Go Round by Kacey Musgraves.
Absolutely.
You know.
Go on, and sing it.
Mama's hooked on Mary Kay. Brother's hooked on Mary J. Daddy's hooked on Mary two doors down.
Yes, keep going.
Mary, Mary, quite contrary. We get bored, so we get married. And just like dust, we settle in this town.
Finish up the chorus, honey. Come on.
On this merry...
Broken.
Broken. Merry go round and round and round we go. Where it stops, nobody knows. And it ain't going down this merry-go-round. This is gorgeous songwriting.
Beautiful.
Because that chorus, it feels like it never ends. And that's the whole point of the song.
That's the point.
Wow. I'm sorry. Okay.
So are you a Kacey fan?
I like a couple of her songs. I had my country phase in high school. Yes. And then I kind of, except for Maren Morris, which we've talked about.
Maren Morris, which we talked about.
Love Maren.
Now, I think Maren's doing the crossover thing a little too early.
She's doing it too early.
She should have had one more. I don't know. I'm not telling her how to, you know, plan her career.
No, you are. And I think you should.
Fine. Well, okay.
I will tell her to lay off the Facetune on her Instagram.
She's doing a lot of Facetune.
It's too much.
Her hair's too short, too.
Yeah.
I like the length. strength.
She should have someone doing that for her who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
She's clearly doing it herself, which I respect the like authenticity.
Sure.
She to me is like hyper millennial in a way that's like slow it down,
right.
slow it down.
Sure.
She can't. She's an 80s Mercedes. She's a 90s baby.
That's
she can't do anything about it.
That's true.
But what a perfect song. It's
that was Bowen Yang's number one song played on Spotify.
I think it was
two
my number
years in a row.
that was your number two though, Tyler?
I think this year, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. I mean, you want to know something? Like, I fully got my life to that song. Like, it clicked in my head. Well, the first time I heard it was good friends Greg Kozatek and Doug Anderson. We drove down to Philly to do some canvassing for the election. This was on my birthday, 2 days before the election, November 6th, 2016. Mm-hmm. Heard it for the first time. I was like, who is this? What an amazing song. And then for the next 48 hours, listen to it on repeat. Election day, I'm like walking over to Littlefield for this fucking show we were doing at Littlefield.
Oh my God, what bad memories.
Blasting that. And I remember
feeling good.
Feeling great. Cause I had like, cause that tweet came up about, remember that tweet that went viral about the Trump cake that was being wheeled into Trump Tower about how fucking crazy that Trump bust cake looked.
Yeah,
and I was like, LOL, he's going to fucking lose. This is going to feel amazing. Yeah. And let me blast Maren fucking Morris in my headphones. And
was your first mistake.
That was my first mistake.
She wasn't even really a Hillary supporter.
Oh yeah, because here's the thing: they had Maren and Casey on a round table.
Yeah, get the country girls together. Yeah. They get real.
And then just the moderator sort of did them dirty and just brought up the election. And
they were like, "Where's Ron Paul?"
Well, no, that was Casey Musgraves. Casey's like, "Well, the table goes quiet," and then Casey's like, "You know, where's Ron Paul when you need him?"
And they're like, where's Ron Paul?
But I feel like Maren has like sort of been like, she's rejected the shut up and sing.
Totally, thing. Which is great.
Like,
yeah.
She's a little bit more outspoken.
Yes.
She
will be replacing as the pop crossover.
Wow.
That's my prediction.
Okay.
As a culture expert.
Will you, do you have any interest in any editorial about Maren?
Other than just she needs to work on the Facetune.
I think
it's a little too much.
I think there's a whole think piece in that.
I think.
And while I'm happy that she's crossing over, I don't want her to be auto-tuned
to oblivion.
Because that Zip Zap Zock song she did with what's...
Oh my God, what?
Zed.
It's called The Middle.
The Middle.
Yeah, The Middle.
I don't like it.
It's by Target.
It's by Target.
And it sounds like you just like bought a girl at Target. And that's what it sounds like. Yeah.
It doesn't have any of her personality in it.
No.
Like her whole album has like so much of her fun personality in it. Like I love the song Rich. I love the song Sugar.
And she's like, I say shit. I'm cool.
Yeah.
Has none of it. Yeah.
No, you're right. It's totally sterilized.
So I don't want that to be the Maren Morris we get.
Got it. Okay, fun tunes you're listening to now that you want to share?
Oh God.
And not to put you on, you know, I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's fine. I mean, right now I saw Hello Dolly on Friday, so I'm just listening to
put on your Sunday clothes.
A lot.
I might just pull the trigger and just buy myself just like a single ticket for the orchestra.
It's really good. And it's not like $800 anymore.
Right. Which is nice. And like, I would pay top dollar to see Bernie.
And you know what? I was more interested in her than Bette Midler.
Okay.
So. I've yet to see Bernadette on stage on Broadway. So I need to go.
This is my seventh time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What have you seen her? Yeah, list the other ones.
I've seen her in two things. I saw them six times each. I saw Little Night Music when I first moved to New York. Still had my student ID from 5 years before that didn't have an expiration date. So I saw her in Little Night Music with Elaine Stritch.
Mm. Wow.
Two times. Very stressful performance because Elaine just drug that out.
Oof. Dang.
It was apparently the unions loved her because it was over 3 hours.
And so they got.
Yeah, they got extra money.
Yeah.
And then I saw Follies four times.
Wow.
Which is still like, that's my like number one, like the best production I've ever seen.
Never seen Follies.
To this day. I mean, actually today, not to this day, today, I actually somehow stumbled upon a filmed version of the...
Sunday in the Park? No.
No, Into the Woods that she was in.
I rented that VHS from the fucking library.
Yeah, I own it. I own it on Amazon.
Her Stay With Me is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Her whole performance. And then you listen to Meryl or you watch Meryl and you're like, it's not to that level.
I still have never seen that. I refuse.
I like it. I mean, I think there's a lot to like about the movie. It's just not seeing it on stage. And none of these will ever be.
Right. Yeah, right. Of course not.
You know what I mean? Like, even like the movie musicals now that are just straight up for them. Like, there's no musical version of The Greatest Showman, but you know the musical will be better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it'll have, like, more than four songs, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that, yes. And also, like, my thing with The Greatest Showman is the first two songs are, like, all sung by kids.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And, like, the thing is, with kids on stage, it's like you can watch it because it's like sort of interesting. Like,
right.
But in a movie, it's like, I don't want to watch these kids. Sing. Yeah. I don't know these kids.
It's a little grating.
Yeah. But you could tell like the whole time it was like, oh, at some point they're going to put this on Broadway. And right. That's almost why this exists.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's like a pilot for Broadway.
Oh. Exactly. It did feel like that. Mm-hmm. It really did. It really did.
Does Frozen, do we think Frozen's going to be better on... Of course it is. Frozen?
Michael Hartney saw it. He said it was a gag.
Although, I'm hearing mixed things.
I'm not a big Frozen fan.
Neither am I.
I watched it. I got to let it go. I was like, okay.
That's basically all you need.
Yeah, and I didn't see Olaf, so I have never had that experience.
You never had the Olaf experience.
No.
I feel good about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What have I missed?
What have you missed? You missed...
A cute song.
The ending is nice.
In summer! I like that song.
The ending between the sisters, you know, when this, when one sister saves
Look,
the other.
You should see it. It's good. Bowen doesn't, it's not good. He thinks right. that Tangled is better than
yes,
Frozen.
I'm
it's
not
not.
Tangled.
Don't.
Culturistas, okay. Hear my call.
Oh my God.
Please.
So asked and answered.
Tweet at us. Excuse me. Tweet at us. Tell us at Los Culturistas if you are a Tangled ho, like me out there, tweet at me.
Or a frozen slut.
Or a frozen slut.
Like me, Matt Rogers. I'm a frozen slut.
And Tyler is?
I guess just like an empowered Brave fan.
Wow.
No,
gorgeous.
Ew. That's
different,
bad.
Different hair colors all around.
Yes.
No, actually blonde and blonde.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Redhead.
Yeah.
That's kind of perfect. But we all still have to remember that Wreck-It Ralph is one of the best movies of all time.
It's not a musical, so I can't give it my full attention.
Yeah, that's the difference.
I need it to be a musical. I've said this before. Like, I can't, I don't know. Wreck-It Ralph to me, like, I get, and I don't know. My criticism stands. I think they didn't show enough worlds.
But see, the thing about Wreck-It Ralph is...
that's just how I feel.
The way that they, like, circumnavigated this whole thing of, like, how are we going to represent all these video game worlds, like, faithfully? Because there's such rabid fan bases around each of them. Like, you can't put up, like, you can't, like, peek into a Mario world and be like, whoa, cool, that was satisfying.
Right.
Like, people are going to find an issue with it. So they made their own, and they played with, they just, like, meshed them together in a very cool way. Anyway.
I thought, like, it was pretty cool, and then I feel like they established, like, three or four characters in three or four different worlds, and then they kind of stuck to those, and I just wanted to see more.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty cool what they did, like Jane Lynch's character in that sort of, like, Halo world.
Sure.
I thought that was awesome.
Call of Duty, but yeah.
Call of Duty. Yeah, I'm not a gamer. I'm really not. But that was cool, and then I felt like we didn't move on from that.
I think that's the biggest barrier for me for Wreck-It Ralph is I don't care about games.
That's
even like old-timey games that I grew up with. Yeah. I'm just like, I don't care about
I'm
this.
I'm feeling...
You know, speaking of growing up...
isolated. Yes, speaking of...
We're going to ask you what we asked every guest, which is, what was the culture that influenced you at a young age? It was the culture that made you say, culture, it might be for me. I'm going to decide to move in a cultural direction with my life. This is pop culture that influences me, Tyler Coates.
Mm-hmm. I think about this question a lot because I'm a big fan of this podcast.
That's kind of what I say.
Also, think about it. I have a really, like, it's the thing I can't fucking stop talking about. If you look at me on Twitter, it's cats.
Cats?
But yes, it's cats.
Okay, we're going to talk about this.
Let's stick a pin in that because cats is an entry point into something else.
Okay.
So like cats, I was like, fuck yes, everything about this crazy nuts. I love it.
But
because I just love musicals and I just love watching people, adults, do insane things for the delight of other adults because that show was for grown-ups.
Yeah,
which is
of course, famously.
But I was thinking about, like, I was, like, obsessed with that stuff as a kid and, like, would go to see anything. And so, like, an actual formative memory about the culture and how I take it in and think about it and put it back out into the world. When I was in fifth grade, so I have a brother who's 6 years younger than me, and my godparents have a daughter who's his same age, and so... They bought tickets to see Beauty and the Beast on Ice.
Wow.
For my brother, not for me.
Whoa.
And so my brother David and their daughter Carrie were going to go together because they're kindergartners, and that's the age group that you should be to
right,
go see
course.
Beauty and the Beast on Ice.
Okay.
On Ice, especially.
I mean, debatably.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. And so I was crushed. I was furious. And then my brother got sick that morning. And so they were like, Tyler, would you like to go? And I was like, hell yes. Let's do it. Let's go to Richmond and experience this great cultural
to the cosmopolitan
yes,
center.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the Coliseum. So we went, and I was like, I love everything about. I love Beauty and the Beast. It's the best, and all the songs. And you see people skating. You see a bell. You see a man in a beast costume. You see adults in teacup costumes. Mm-hmm. In fucking, I don't know. Candelabras and a wardrobe dancing, doing all that. And I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe this is so great.
I've never seen an On Ice.
I've never seen
the only
it on
time.
Ice.
And I was just like, this is the best thing I've ever seen, buying a program using my money that was given to me to go buy some merch.
Oh my God. Home.
The next day I go to school with my Beauty and the Beast program. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, you guys, look what I did last night. And I show, and like this
How old
kid,
are you?
Fifth grade. So like what, 11?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is sure. when it begins.
This is when it began.
Oh.
And this kid, Dennis, was like, let me see that. I was like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. But be careful with it.
Oh, no.
And he grabbed it and he was like, hey, everybody, Tyler went to see Beauty and the Beast on Ice like a dumb gay baby.
A dumb gay baby.
And everyone like laughed and I was like, I was like, what?
Yeah, it was a new world.
Just happened.
Yeah, you've been gay shamed.
And I like grabbed it back and I just remember thinking like, I will not let this stop me from appreciating what I appreciate.
Yeah, no.
This just means I'll do it on my own.
Yes.
And no
yes.
one else is invited. And what I didn't know then is that I will spend the next 12 years of my life doing that until I go to college and meet people who I can be friends with based on mutual interests as opposed to neighbors.
Okay.
So, yes. Oh, my yeah. God.
So when did Cats enter the fray?
Cats was around the same year. I remember, I feel like we were watching like an after-school special type of movie about like, I don't know, a girl got into crack or something, and so she couldn't sing in her talent show, but the song that she was going to sing was Memory.
Yeah.
And so I remember hearing that song and being like, what is this? The most beautiful song I've ever heard.
It's a beautiful song.
I hear
pretty
it
gorgeous
over and over again. And like, I had a friend, Jeanette, who probably hit puberty in fourth grade, so like she was predestined to just be awkward and like also loved musicals and like only have gay friends.
That girl.
She and I like latched onto each other real early, and we're like, the two of us are together forever.
Yes.
Still friends?
She's in Australia now. She also got out of Montrose.
She
got very far away
as possible.
And so I went home and I was like, I love this song from Cats. What is it? My mom was like, oh, I saw Cats once. Like, we saw it. It's like people in cat costumes. And like, it's like, let's buy it. How do we see it? How do I get it? So we were at the mall in Fredericksburg, the other big city. And I was like, let's go to Musicland. I saved up my allowance. I'm buying the two tapes. My mother wanted me to get
tapes.
The highlights. And I was like, hell no, I'm getting the
full
thing.
No, we need the whole
I don't care if it
score.
Costs $16. I'm going to listen to all of it. And then we got into our van and immediately plugged it in. And like the first song is like, batshit.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I am all in. And, you know, it takes like 2 hours to get to the one song that I heard. But by that time, I was like, this is all I want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on poetry by T.S. Eliot. Like, adults, he wrote this. And then other adults were like, this is good content.
Wow.
Let's make a musical about it with other adults for the enjoyment of adults.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then my mother surprised me with tickets to the national tour in Richmond, and we sat in the orchestra. I remember when the lights went down and like we're on the aisle, so like the cats come out.
Yeah.
And like they turn on their eyes and scare the shit out of me.
Mm.
And they were just roaming around, and then they go up on stage, and then I could only stare at their crotches.
Because it's
you know, the majesty of watching performance, like big performance. Mm-hmm. It's no Disney on Ice. It's like for real.
It's for real.
It's dancing.
With their whole body.
Yeah. And the bodies that I could not stop staring at.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's enough. That's
the
thing about
the girls and the boys.
Right.
I was very confused.
No, that's the thing about, especially at that age, it's like when you go to see a Broadway show, you are looking at every crevice of their body. You're like, okay. Like being a performer and like sometimes like performing for people that are a little bit younger, it's like you get off and then you're like, oh wow, me at that age was like really probably looking at the performers like butts the whole time.
Oh yeah. They're good butts too.
They're good butts, but I mean, you
think performer butts.
Performer butts.
Cat butts.
Cat butts. I think those are both kind of okay. We have our most cultured guest on the show who gave us not one, but two like perfect encapsulations of I think the platonic ideal of the answer to our question.
Wow.
Because I think the whole Disney on Ice story, like,
yeah, that was wonderful.
Full Joseph Campbell arc, I don't know, hero's journey of like, oh my god, like what a beautiful like the queer narrative of beautiful like introduction to this like piece of culture, and then you were just roundly shamed for it
for having the emotional response to a stupidly emotional thing.
But it wasn't less real for
I still felt it.
Do you think the skating heightened the emotion?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Well, I think I've always had an affinity for like ridiculousness, so that definitely was like the Beauty and the Beast was like the entry point, and then I was like, oh, here's another layer that's
they're
truly
gonna
ice dumb.
Skate.
Like
they're
this is. I think I had a recognition where I was like, this is really dumb, but it's so good.
It's dragging
it's
away.
So great
because you got to like you got to sort of evaluated at every level of like, wow, this is amazing. This is also really dumb.
Right.
I love this. Oh, I'm being shamed for it. I'm going to put up some defenses against what other people think about my love for this.
And like, I think this is why I hated the live action one.
You really hated it.
Yes. Okay.
Keep going.
I watched all of it. I did not turn it off because I was like, I'm going to see this shit through.
It gets worse as it goes.
Oh, it's a travesty.
Yeah, it gets worse.
It's truly horrific. But what made me so mad about it is like, A, it's not live action. Let's stop lying to ourselves.
There you go.
It's just CGI. Mm-hmm. It's still animated
80%
with
CGI.
One person who can't sing or has no screen presence.
Oh, that's
Belle.
Well, so you also don't think she has any screen presence?
Not in that.
Yeah,
no.
Sure, fair.
But like what I wanted, was Disney on Ice. I wanted to see...
Stupid.
I want to see Kevin Klein in a candle costume.
Yeah.
I want to see Emma Thompson, her face poking out of a giant teacup. I wanted those teacups to be too big and human size.
Do you think we'll get...
It's like a matter of scale too for you.
I wanted to see those
you
actors
want a theater.
Working for it. Yes.
You want a theater.
Because the other thing I loved as a kid was the 85 Alice in Wonderland TV miniseries with Carol Channing is in it.
Oh.
Which is like weird.
I have not seen that.
Have you ever seen the clip of her singing Jam Tomorrow, Jam Yesterday?
No.
Oh, you like go on YouTube, pack a lunch and listen to that
pack
because
lunch.
It's insane. It's just like this, it's a bunch of like vaudevillians like from the like 40s 50s who then were like Ringo is in it, Sammy Davis Jr. is in it as a caterpillar, like it's and they're in like full body costumes,
and that's what
like that, like you see the seams, you see the zippers, like that's my aesthetic right there,
like a high school play on film,
right? Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
think we'll get that for Lion King? You think Beyonce will get on all fours?
I mean, I would love that. I'm afraid
you think she'll Nala
she
around
won't.
I don't think that'll happen.
I don't think so either.
Can I just read to everyone a plot summary of Cats?
Yeah,
by...
that's what you were digging.
I mean,
I was wondering what you were doing over there.
Yeah,
I've been asked to tell the plot of Cats,
okay,
and I've
so
been able to do it.
I would love to know. I don't know what the story
because
is.
Because there is a story much to what most people think.
Am I making this up? I've seen the film.
There's no film. Oh,
there's no film.
The like the great performances.
Yes,
they
yes,
filmed
yes.
it on stage.
Right. I've seen that and couldn't tell. I mean, this was like, you know, over a decade ago. Could not tell you a single thing, even after watching it.
I don't think people go for the story.
Okay, so how about this? I'll read this plot summary written by friend of the show, Branson Reese.
Oh, I think I know. Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Oh, so this is going to be tongue in cheek.
Well, no.
It felt a little, I mean, I read that and I was like,
I think we should have Tyler tell us the story and then see how correctly it lines
okay,
up.
Okay,
I mean, I
let's
will be
that.
Very serious about
go,
this.
Go, please
okay,
be
okay,
serious.
Okay, please,
we want
please.
To know the story of Cats.
You have the floor.
So once a year in London, all the cats gather for the Jellicle Ball.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know about this.
There's like, you see like, there's like, a couple of like cat burglars, Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. You have like a crazy like auntie like Jenny Anydots who's like takes kittens under her wing and like all these Rum Tum Tugger, who's like horny and weird about
I
it.
I played him in a sketch.
Yes, of course. And then you have Grisabella, who was like
old bitch.
Old bitch, but like on her last life. Oh, and God. But she is the glamour cat and everyone hates her because she used to think her shit didn't stink, but then she got old and everyone's like, yeah, bitch.
Damn.
Guess you what? Use the same litter boxes as the rest of us.
Oh my God, that's so.
So they're all vying to be the cat that goes to the Heaviside Lair, which is cat heaven. You get there in a tire and you get reborn and you get picked by old Deuteronomy, who's the oldest cat.
Yes.
And he's like the father figure.
And only one of them can go?
Only one of them can go, yes.
What?
But the whole thing is that they all like are sort of performing. It's sort of a reality competition when you think about it, because they're all performing to be chosen to be the all-star cat.
Yes. Okay.
I also recently realized it's a lot like a chorus line, except for getting into the show, they're just trying to get into heaven.
Okay.
Oh, sure,
keep
sure,
going.
Sure.
So what happens?
Totally.
And then, so there's also like the bad guy in the cavity who's like, responsible for, he like kidnaps somebody, and then Mr. Mistopheles, who's a magic cat, he comes and saves the day.
Wow.
And then Grisabella comes out and she sings Memory, and everyone is like, oh wow, you're actually sad, you have feelings, you have an inner life,
yeah,
you deserve to go. And so she goes to the Heaviside Lair and everyone's like, that's amazing.
And
that's
how it ends.
So yeah. The moral of the story is respect your elders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Know your history.
Or know your history. Or everyone,
know your history.
Your feline history.
Your feline history. Everyone has inner pain.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. I'll read the brands because it's very tongue-in-cheek and very reductive. And I just want...
How did I know?
And I want the counterweight to this to be Tyler's wonderfully textured synopsis.
Okay, let's hear how it measures up.
Here's the plot of Cats as best as I, Branson, can explain it. I'm just going to quote him. So you got a bunch of cats running around up there. Seems simple enough, right? We're in, we're out. Think again, pal. Because this isn't just another night in the alley. An enormous cat has chosen tonight to vaguely announce that he can send a cat to heaven. He never really goes into detail, but the rule seems to be one cat gets to go to heaven regardless of whether or not they're sick. And nobody starts crying. They just take the shit in stride. That's shit in stride. So then, instead of pleading their case for why they deserve to go to heaven when they die, which is tonight, even if they're healthy, they spend an hour introducing themselves to the audience. And
I have questions already.
Okay, great. That's act one.
Why do we believe the big cat when he says he can do this?
Because he's old Deuteronomy.
He's old Deuteronomy.
Just don't question it.
It's
also tradition.
It's tradition.
It's just cat tradition.
Oh, okay, so they come to the Jellicle Ball because they know this event is happening, this sort of like reaping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's world building. right? Okay.
Now I'm on board.
Okay, great. Act two, you're like, strap in, this will probably be all about heaven. And years later, you'll remember thinking that, and it will break your dang heart because nope, 3 to 4 more cats just introduce themselves. And then this heaven cat, who by the way, has done zero magic and has proven nothing, shows back
up. Thank you, thank you.
And you're watching and you're like, here we go, better late than never. But he sort of just moseys around. And then all of a sudden his skin falls off and the devil jumps out. And so now you're watching and he throws a firework at somebody and you're like, it was all worth it. Here we go. Here we motherfucking go. But then two cats dance aggressively near him. And so he apologizes and politely leaves. So then two more cats introduce themselves. And then some old woman we've never met.
Okay, she is introduced several times.
So then that's not true. So we can refute that. Shows up and sings the only song from Cats that you know. And then she goes to heaven. This could have been just the first two tweets. Okay, there's something about... Who wrote the book for Cats?
Do you know? There's no... Well, so T.S. Eliot wrote
T.S. Eliot. Okay.
A collection of poems. He was actually nominated posthumously for a Tony for writing the book. Oh, no, that's a little
bullshit. Some bullshit.
Okay. It's mostly just Andrew Lloyd Webber's handiwork.
Sure.
Yeah. And probably cocaine, I assume.
So cocaine. Yeah. So that's the challenge here is that the musical was limited in its storytelling ability, efficiency, what have you, by the source material.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So then I don't totally buy Branson's synopsis of that.
I don't totally buy Branson.
Okay.
Hey, listen, Branson, I don't totally buy it.
Matt doesn't buy it.
I don't know.
So this is really like, again, a counterweight to my lifelong perception of Cats, which has been like, ugh.
Crazy, stupid, crazy shit.
Crazy. Not even stupid, just like crazy, crazy.
It is stupid. It's truly dumb.
Where does the word Jellicle come from?
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, that's just a term that T.S. Eliot made up. Because they all have three different names. They have their human name that's like, if you have a cat, you call it like Roy.
Right.
Buster.
But then, yeah, but there is a Buster
Oh, really?
Bustopher Jones, excuse me. He's like a fancy, like...
They did too much
He's
with
like
it.
A tuxedo cat, you know?
Wow.
So he's fancy. Uh-huh. He's like cat about town.
Uh-huh.
And then, so they all have their, like, names that, like, their human calls them, but then they have their, like, cat fellow
Grisabella.
Names. Yeah. Grisabella, Rumpelteazer, Bumble Urina.
Rumtum Tugger.
Rumtum Tugger.
Yes.
McCavity.
Is he actually the horny one? Rumtum Tugger is actually horny?
Yeah, because he, like... picks women out of the audience to like basically like get he's like the he's the sex appeal of the show.
I see.
The externalized like you are supposed to be turned on by him.
Oh, okay.
But
I
he's also
it.
Just like fussy.
Okay.
You know?
a fussy, hot,
horny yeah. little cat.
That's what I
don't know.
He's the guy. He's the cat that you want to fuck. So but he won't give it to you.
I get it. Yeah, I get you it. Know what I mean? That part I get. Yeah.
It's musical. Just like real life.
Just like real life.
Yeah. What about other Andrew Lloyd Webber? Are you a fan of his?
Yeah. The day after the election, 2016.
That was. Yeah, we remember.
Obviously, we were so depressed. I went to work and I was like, I've got to do something about this. And so I spent probably $180 on tickets to see Phantom. Wow. He's like, that is going to be how
for
I
that
do.
Night or what?
Yeah, for that night. And I told my boyfriend, John, I was like, he works at home from home in Park Slope. And I was like, meet me in Times Square. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to dinner and we're going to deal with this in our way. And
that's
we went
beautiful.
To see Phantom and it was fantastic.
I've seen Phantom.
I do love Phantom.
That's my second time I saw it. The first time I saw it, I had very high expectations that were not met.
You can go in yeah. with high expectations yeah. because you will be bored.
After
it
30
is boring.
Years, yeah.
But I appreciate Phantom as a whole holistic musical piece. I yeah. appreciate more than most of Andrew Lloyd Webber's right. other work.
Jesus Christ Superstar is great.
I've never seen it either.
It's got some real jams.
The television performance of yeah. it will be the first time I see it.
It's good. It's okay. like, I mean, that movie is actually one of the better... I think one
film
of the
adaptations.
Better film adaptations. Yeah, because it's just like, it's a rock opera. It's just all singing. It's all sure. fun. Everyone's sexy in it.
Do you know what we saw, which was like not good?
Sunset Boulevard.
No, I saw it last year. I loved it.
You
see,
loved
it? Was the
it?
Second time I saw it. See, I saw it as a kid.
You saw it in the 90s? Okay, great.
I saw it as a kid with Petula Clark.
Petula?
Ooh, yeah.
That's and then
fancy.
For John's birthday.
Miss Glenn.
Yeah, we saw
went for
Glenn.
My birthday. Yeah. Oh my God, actually, that was a year ago. That's so funny.
Because my boyfriend is a Pisces like you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were just talking
ago.
About that.
Wow, Pisces boyfriend Pisces. Seeing sunset.
Pisces, baby.
So the story that we like to tell was we were in the fucking nosebleeds.
Okay. Yeah.
Like third mezzanine or
really
later.
Far away.
Yeah.
And literally the last row.
It was bad. And we were really far away. But yeah. they were so cheap. They were $30 tickets.
Right. And, yeah. so you're familiar. They're like the stage was tiered.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it was deconstructed
yeah. very much. So but Glenn's entrance is from the top tier.
Yes.
So
yeah.
her first entrance, we just hear this like roar of applause, and all we see are Glenn Close's feet.
No.
Just like, and everyone just losing their shit. And we're
so,
in the back like, that's her feet.
That's
like
so
woo!
Sad. And she was wild that yeah. that for that entire show. She's yeah. I mean,
she's nuts. I mean, she's crazy.
She was acting with every part
I mean,
of her body the whole time.
I appreciated Glenn Close because
she's amazing.
She has a lot to prove because she's always like second fiddle to Meryl.
Oh,
so like,
sure.
She's like, fuck
at
it.
Least
at
second.
At this point, she's like, fuck it. I'm going to give you Glenn
give
Close.
Give you what I have.
And if you don't like it, deal with it. Go find Meryl Streep.
Wow. I mean, I would kill to see some sort of dramatization of that, of just Glenn and Meryl crossing paths. Every
I mean,
they
made
then.
Like two movies together.
Well, totally, but yeah, like, but there's some like feud/wicked situation yeah. there where it's like, I want someone to dramatize that.
I actually yeah. think the existence
in 50 years that'll be a musical.
It will.
The existence of Meryl has forced all of her contemporaries to do more interesting things.
More interesting things than I would say that she does lately.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow,
I think she
phones it in a lot.
There you go.
She certainly has a mode where she is really acting and
right.
giving you top tier talent
right.
for all time. And then a mode where she is doing Meryl Streep, which is always fun.
It's great.
But very easy for her.
But yeah, I think that the thing that I've noticed with her is that she never works with like really great directors.
Mm. Wow.
Stretch her. I think that she's found the people that she likes. I mean,
that is really interesting.
Like, for example, August Osage County.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a great source material. Like,
yeah.
a 3-hour fucking
yeah.
Steppenwolf
masterpiece
yeah. family drama directed by some nobody
mm-hmm. yeah.
that
yeah.
collects all these people, and she can, like, just hammer way through it and get an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, right.
It's a Tracy Letts play. Mm-hmm. Every other Tracy Letts play that's been made into a movie was directed by William Friedkin, who is like a psychopath. He did The Exorcist. Yep, he basically broke Ellen Burstyn's back. But like he did Bug, which is fucked up. He did Killer Joe, which is fucked up.
Right.
He should have done August Osage County, it would but like she would have never been. Worked with him.
No, yeah.
This is why Tyler is here. I live for this shit. Yeah.
And I like her. I mean, Sophie's Choice, I think, is like one of the all-time best on-screen performances ever captured. She learned how to speak three languages with a Polish accent.
Her at her best, you can't deny her at her best. And I like what I'm saying is I think it's great that she eats up as much as she does, because I do think it forces specifically Sigourney Weaver and Glenn Close to have interesting careers and therefore be trailblazers for other people. Right. For example, Glenn Close's first huge film was Fatal Attraction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was what made her a household name. And that kind of, I think, literally created a subgenre.
Because before that, she was playing very similar roles.
Exactly.
Had been on Broadway, won a Tony. I think had been nominated for an Oscar before Fatal Attraction, but like that's the one that
really broke
gave
it
her
open.
The
became her a movie star.
Yeah. And Sigourney Weaver was always weird. Like they were at Yale together.
They were
at
Yale together. Yeah. She was always not getting the parts. Like she was always playing like the weird sister or even the mom to like Meryl's ingenue, which if you think about it is kind of weird. But you know, Sigourney doing Alien creates the female driven action hero. Sci-fi action hero. Sci-fi it is even more specific.
Yeah.
Which is so funny. And then because she gets notoriety, she's able to do cool stuff like Working Girl.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, The Ice Storm later on in her career. Yeah. Because she's well known.
Gorillas in the Mist.
In the Mist, honey. Number 80. Don't tell me Sigourney can't serve you biopic.
I was gonna say, and number 20 right after that is okay. Well, first of all, let's repeat that.
Don't tell me Sigourney can't serve you biopic.
And rule number 20 right after that is
Don't sleep on Gorillas in the Mist.
I slept on it. I've never seen that.
You've never seen Gorillas in the Mist?
No.
You gotta see Gorillas in the Mist. So I watched Gorillas in the Mist in AP Environmental Science.
Okay, that's why I didn't see it.
I
skipped that one.
Okay, no, it's good.
Skip that class.
It's good, and I'm not ruining it because this really happened to Dian Fossey, but at the end of the movie, like, I didn't know what happened to Dian Fossey. It's very tragic.
Wait, it's not Jane Goodall?
No. Jane Goodall lives to this day.
Wow.
In Gorillas in the Mist, spoiler alert.
She dies, right?
She gets murdered by poachers who stab her to death while she's sleeping.
Maybe a gorilla did it.
Yeah, but
no.
That would have been a real good twist.
No. It wasn't the gorillas, it was the poachers.
I have a good friend who is a cocoa
truther.
That would have been a
twist. As a what? Cocoa truther?
Cocoa truther. She thinks that Coco killed her cat. Allball?
Wow.
Oh my God, a Coco truther.
Yeah. A Coco truther.
So she's been like on that for many decades.
Wow.
I'm a Coco truther now in that I think the animated film is actually live action.
Wow.
I'm a Coco truther.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing. I'm a Coco truther in that I think it took place in Tulum, which is not a real Mexican location because it's been so industrialized by tourism.
Wow.
I'm a Coco truther in that I think that hot chocolate tastes like vanilla.
That's beautiful.
I think it is beautiful.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Wait, just to get back on this, you know, these advanced actresses, we'll call them.
Advanced. You can say older.
Executive level actresses.
Executive level actresses.
We don't because like advanced style is what you would call like
an old person. Wears a hat. That's nice.
Advanced actresses. Title of app.
Advanced actresses.
Because we have an authority.
Yeah, sure. 100%.
Right? Okay.
I'm very down for it.
I feel like, this is such a throwaway thing, but Iron Lady Oscar, garbage
Oscar.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Should have won for maybe any of the other five she's been most recently.
Adaptation.
Even if you had given it to her for August Osage County, Devil.
Yeah.
Like, Devil Wears Prada. Yeah. Probably first and foremost.
Actually, yes.
What else? I mean, Into the Woods, I'd rather give her that than fucking Iron Lady. I think that's literally garbage. Julia. You know what I mean? Like so many other better performances. Even
she
this year.
She carried Julia and Julia.
Yeah.
It should just be Julia.
Yeah, it should just be Julia.
She was in Julia too. The movie Julia. With Jane Fonda.
Oh, wow.
I think it was her first movie.
Wow. I thought Manhattan was her first movie.
I don't know.
Julia. It might have been. Yeah. I trust you.
She's like one scene.
Right.
In Julia.
In Julia.
Yeah.
And then in Manhattan, she like gets accosted by Woody Allen. Yeah. Oh my God.
Ugh. Like many others.
Like many others. Oh, like Shelley Duvall too. But she was in Annie Hall. Shelley Duvall was in Annie Hall. Yeah.
Yeah. Very briefly.
She goes on a date
with one of his exes.
That's interesting. Yeah. So wait, speaking so much about Meryl and the Oscars, we should probably discuss last evening.
Let's catch up.
Now, several evenings ago, for if you're listening to it on the day of release, but what did we think of the Oscars, folks?
I mean, I thought they were very boring. With the exception of Shape of Water, I think everyone knew what was going to win stuff.
But wasn't there like, oh, you didn't think Shape of Water was going to win?
I thought it was going to be, this was the first year that I thought like the Best Picture was kind of a toss up.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
I didn't think Get Out was going to win, although it should have.
It should have.
I thought the front runner was going to be Three Billboards. And then I thought maybe Dunkirk would be like a weird dark horse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like something Dunkirk would have like cut through with the votes being split between all these other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was a moment last night when Dunkirk won Best Editing, where like that's a precursor.
It won several awards earlier in the evening.
That are precursors.
Which, if you really think about it, like it was never going to lose those awards. But, you know, that made it seem like, oh, are we headed for this?
A Dunkirk
win. I never thought that was going to happen. I also think that it's very tough for a movie sometimes to steamroll the precursors as Best Picture and still win Best Picture. Like, I never thought Three Billboards was going to be the film of the year. I kind of get Shape of Water. And also, if you think about it in the grand scheme, George Tavares had a tweet, which I really liked, which was he quote tweeted someone that said, overall, it was a really safe Best Picture choice. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, yeah, I hate when female led horror sci-fi like thrillers with a like unlikely romance directed by a Mexican immigrant hate Best Picture win Best Picture. Oh, it's so safe. Like, it's really kind of cool,
especially for
a Guillermo del Toro film to win Best Picture. They're so specific. And he's such an auteur. Like, it's so kind of actually not safe that he won. This would ordinarily never really happen. I just think because we've been talking about it so much and we all wanted a super alternative choice.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which is, I think, like actually something with the world right now is like we're all ready to move way past what everything. Like,
sure.
I mean, the Oscars bring out the worst in people every year.
Like,
truly, everyone the next day is an asshole.
Yeah. And in the months leading up to it.
And like, because I think, I don't know, last year was the first year in like maybe since like 99 where I felt like just a glut of just amazing movies that like spoke to the time, even though they, with the exception of The Post, were not like engineered to.
You're talking about this year?
Yeah. Like last year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Where like, and like, there were three movies about, there are three movies about poisonous mushrooms being like a narrative device. Like, that's weird.
Oh my God.
Because it was The Beguiled and Phantom Thread and then Lady Macbeth.
Poisonous mushrooms.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like that in itself is like really, really fucking weird.
Uh-huh.
And just like the way that I felt like class was shown in many different films, like some better than others. And then Get Out, I think, like was just a phenomenon and like what it showed and like what it depicted and like how well it was received.
Right.
And I think everyone's so emotional that everyone was especially emotional about the movies that came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's how I felt. Like I just like stopped being so objective about everything and just was like, I love things more often.
Yes.
I like things more often because I was just like, this appeal, like I feel something about it.
Totally. Exactly. That's
and
great.
I think people can do themselves a favor and do everyone else a favor and just go back to trying to enjoy movies again.
Yeah.
Because I think this actually started last year when literally the narrative became La La Land is Trump.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, La La Land is not Trump.
No.
And La La Land doesn't exist to beat Moonlight.
No.
Okay?
No.
La La Land was created lovingly and very well by a lot of people who wanted to make this movie musical. And if you have problems with the casting, like, go ahead and have that issue. But this movie is not Donald Trump.
Well, no. We're putting a lot of external narratives on stuff.
Yes.
Totally.
And, like, trying to create this, like, weird bifurcated world that doesn't exist. Like,
totally.
It just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, your whole assessment of like all these movies this year dealing with class in different ways, some better than others, like totally just occurred to me now, which like feels very shallow of me, but like, yeah, Lady Bird, Get Out.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the Florida Project?
I love the Florida Project.
Yeah. All of those.
Yeah.
That's good. You know what? Yeah. Like, this was a year where you really could allow yourself to let any of these films speak to you.
Yeah.
And like, people did really graft on these things, like, especially on, like, especially to Three Billboards being right. like, this is a, blah, blah, blah. Like,
it's racist.
It's racist, right. yeah. whatever. I'm of the mind. Did you tweet this? I feel like I might have read this from you. Like, yeah, I think you tweeted this thing about like Three Billboards feels very Flannery O'Connor.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that's because I read a shit ton of Flannery O'Connor as a college student. I feel like Three Billboards. I saw it as screening and I loved it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what its pros, it's just a huge acting yeah. movie. Like, it's stacked.
It's a play.
Like,
it's great. Yeah,
it's a play that couldn't be performed on stage because right. there's like. Bombs happening.
There's deer. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's that deer. And Three Billboards are really hard to pull off on stage.
Yeah.
You'd have to strike them too big. Yeah. yeah
they'd have to see it off stage.
Yeah.
Do that thing where they point into the audience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That. So, yeah, I think that, like, once I thought about, like, after I was just like, oh my God, like, these performances were so amazing and, like, so effective. Then I was like, oh, there's some weird stuff with how it was written and like how it unfolded. And like, sure. I think like they used race as a prop, which was like mm-hmm. its biggest problem.
Right.
And just like the sort of sloppy writing that like I think you can get away with in a play because you don't, I don't know, there's just like so much more sensory that you have to take in all at once.
Totally.
In a play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when I saw it again the second time, I was like, well, Frances McDormand's great. Sam Rockwell's great. Like, mm-hmm. but it does feel like a bad Flannery O'Connor. Like,
sure.
As someone who tried to just rip off Flannery O'Connor in
college, don't we all?
Like creative writing classes, that's probably what I would have tried to do.
Every writer, every creative person has a pseudo Southern Gothic phase. I'm just kidding.
Matt? Yeah, that was a big part of my influences.
Yeah.
Southern Goths.
Yeah.
I was always writing about Southern Goths.
Yeah.
You know, Tampa area girls named Beth
who listened to Simple Plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not even a goth.
But goth they girls. They were goth.
They thought we were goth.
Exactly. And it's about what you feel about yourself.
Yeah. I don't want to deny anyone's truth here.
No, exactly.
Rule of Culture number 91. It's about how you feel about yourself.
Tyler had this great moment, and I just want to congratulate you on this because this feels very aspirational to me. You saw all the Best Picture nominees before they were announced.
The first time in a long time
where you just had seen them all.
Yeah.
And I commend you.
And did you have a strong favorite? You thought Get Out should have won.
I have like my objective favorites, and I have like my like I would say that like my top five movies were Lady Bird, Get Out, Call Me by Your Name, Shape of Water, which really surprised me, and then the ones that didn't get nominated were like I, Tonya, which I saw twice.
I loved it.
A Quiet Passion, which is a Cynthia Nixon movie about Emily Dickinson.
I heard about that.
It's a real hoot. I watched it twice in a weekend because I was like having a weird weekend. Uh-huh. But like it's a real long, it's an interesting film. I've never seen a movie that like shows a creative struggle so intimately and like shows the interiority of a human being in like such a beautiful way. But it's also kind of boring. I'll cop to that.
Is it like
you can't just turn it on, smoke a joint, and be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Quiet Passion? Cool.
Is it like The Hours if it was just Virginia Woolf and then a century before?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
I love The Hours.
I hate The Hours. Well, I did The Hours for Fuck That Movie. I think you were there for that.
Oh, yes, yeah. I did.
Oh, yeah. What a good one to do.
I was there for that.
Because I loved The Hours when it came out. I think a sophomore year, and
okay.
I drove to Charlottesville from where I went to school in Harrisonburg, Virginia, to see it because it was in Harrisonburg.
Wow.
And I remember being like, this is really brilliant and poetic.
Well, because I mean, at the time, it was kind of one of the, it felt very sort of.
It felt very new. Yeah. And then I watched it again as an adult and was like, this is like, it's a 14 minute credit sequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you're just watching these women just like run around, and it's also weird because it's like it takes place just before 9/11.
Oh, New York, yeah. Then.
So like it's like the last pre 9/11 New York movie that came out the following.
Wow, how interesting!
So like that was weird.
Very astute.
And so like by that point, like even like in hindsight now, like talking about the AIDS crisis in that way in 2001 was a little like weird to talk about it with that like weight and that like sort of melodrama.
So watching it now, you feel like it feels a little anachronistic the
yeah,
way. Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good modern Meryl performance too.
I think she's great at it.
And she didn't even get nominated for that.
No. Julianne Moore is great at it. And obviously Nicole.
Julianne Moore was great in that way that she was great at the time.
Right.
Like she kind of was given the same performance again and again and again.
Right. I said that Darkest Hour, Gary Oldman winning for that was his Still Alice. Because who the fuck saw Still Alice?
Yeah, I know.
I refuse to see that movie. No. I won't go.
No.
That was just engineered to get her an Oscar, and like it, no one needs to see that.
Right, right.
Alec Baldwin's in it.
I know.
And Kristen Stewart as her daughter.
Like, that Alec Baldwin's in it.
I feel like we need that, and it's just been tried over and over again. Just an engineered movie for a career Oscar for fucking Annette. Like,
yeah.
Like, they try every year. And never, I don't think she's ever going to win.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
Kobe Bryant has an Oscar and Annette doesn't.
Yeah, they'll give her like an honorary, I think.
Yeah.
Like Gina Rowlands.
At that point, sure. I mean, I wonder if it feels like it counts for them.
Totally.
Probably not.
I feel like they really do keep trying with her.
Right, they do.
I think someday, I think we'll get it. I think she'll hack it.
And then I think, you know who'll take her place? You know who I think is probably never winning?
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say her. Yeah, and then you did too. Yeah. Oh my God.
I think she'll pass away with like 15 nominations.
Yeah.
I really do. I think she'll be getting.
We don't know that.
I think she'll be getting them into her 70s and won't win.
Yeah.
That makes me sad.
Or Jessica Chastain. I mean, I would like.
I think she'll win.
Okay.
Well, I mean, okay. Just a quick thing that I want to circle back on with Guillermo. Did not know this. Fun fact. For the past 5 years of Best Director wins, 4 out of the 5 have been Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is really cool.
Oh, fantastic.
Like Guillermo, and then Iñárritu twice, and then the Gravity guy.
Cuarón.
Yeah, Cuarón. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. No, the fifth, just 4 out of 5, and so, but Iñárritu won twice.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. I always forget he was won twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Revenant and for Birdman. Yeah.
Oh my God, I did not see the Revenant.
I
was not.
I saw half of it.
I wasn't going that
you
far.
You saw the Revenant. You know.
right.
He sleeps in a bear. It's like that's all you need.
I will
say
this.
Tom Hardy grumbles.
Right. Get Out winning Best Screenplay, that might have been enough.
I guess I would have loved it if it won.
We all would have loved it.
Yeah, I know.
We all would have loved it. But having that many nominations on top of being such a phenomenon, and the fact that it won Best Original Screenplay, it has that forever. And I think that is just a really good example of the Academy Awards getting it right.
Right.
Because that was, in every sense of the word, the best original screenplay.
Right, yeah.
That's like we have never
smart
seen
award
it before.
Too. Yes. Like that's the meaningful award, I think.
I think so.
It's an award that rewards intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and from every standpoint, it's just like that should go down in history.
Yeah.
And I also think I don't know, maybe it's because that's what I went to college for, but like I have such a respect for someone that can put something so amazing into that art form. Mm-hmm. Like, and it really is so hard to do. And then there's so many moving pieces. And also the fact that he directs it, produces it, and writes it, and was still so clearly able to see his vision through.
Yeah,
like
right.
Sometimes you can drive yourself crazy on a project like that artistically. And the fact that he was so focused and so disciplined in every respect that script worked as well as it did.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing. Because guess what? Like, Greta Gerwig, I thought that was an amazing script, and that would have been my second choice, but she will write more movies that. And perhaps her greatest work is still ahead of her. In fact, I bet it is. I think that Jordan Peele, like, not to say that we won't see more amazing work for him, but I do believe that Get Out will be a strong part of his legacy.
Right.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that it's right that he won an Oscar for it, because my thing with Oscars, and I always say this, is could it have been done by anyone else as well?
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know that Get Out is accomplished as well by anyone else at any other point in their career than Jordan Peele right now for this moment.
Right. Gorgeous. I will say that... Because I'm sure the screenplay's out there somewhere. I have to read the.
No. You can read it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who posted it? Nathaniel.
If
you go on the Film Experience, Nathaniel Rogers for thefilmexperience.net. We'll give him another plug here. And by the way, the Film Bitch Awards are underway.
They're underway, honey.
But he sometimes does like anatomy of a scene,
right?
Or like something like that, and he breaks down a scene. And he specifically talked about the scene in Get Out, which is them getting pulled over,
right?
And her conversation with the police officer
about how she wants to avoid being, you know,
yes,
tracked,
and how it works. Has to work several different ways,
yeah,
in order to work as a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because on rewatch value, you have to you understand that she's panicking because
there's a cop. She's talking about
this
that.
Is all going to happen, and right. also it's a performance, and it's a performance on top of a performance, right. etc. But he links to the full script.
Oh, great! I gotta read it. Well, because you know why I have to read the Fruit Loop scene the way it's written.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing. Is it's
but
like
I think that's one of the most iconic. And I mean, I'm using that term like
it's pronounced willy-nilly.
Iconique. I'm using that term willy-nilly. Yeah. But yeah, just what an amazing scene.
Yeah. I wonder if Greta Gerwig, I don't think she feels super sad.
No, I mean, did you see the clip of her like being like, I love him towards Guillermo del Toro? Like she seems like, I think she's excited to like be a part of that conversation
at
all.
Yeah. I mean, that was also cool when Emma Stone was like, these four men and Greta Gerwig did such an amazing, and then everyone was applauding. I mean, I think that it was a night celebrating Greta Gerwig in many ways.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's huge. It's historic.
Yeah.
Fifth woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So big deal.
And there will be more
in the Sacramento Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
SCU, baby.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to bring up the other big item of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Which was RuPaul was asked if he would allow a transitioning person, like a male to female individual who was in the process of transitioning, to compete on the show as a contestant of RuPaul's Drag Race. And he kind of said no, because, you know, then it's not actually drag.
It's no longer subversive.
Right. And so then he got a lot of flack about that. And so he doubled down in a tweet that said, you know, you can use performance enhancing drugs and still be an athlete. You just can't compete in the Olympics.
The show inherently is one that evolves a lot. But and RuPaul himself has a lot of like inconsistencies about what the show means. Like the joke about like it's not RuPaul's best friend's don't, and no one goes home with a participation trophy, but like literally everyone does.
Everyone does.
everyone does.
That's so funny.
And so stuff like that, like, you know, it shouldn't matter. And like, I don't know. It's interesting because it does bring, I don't know, like because I was like very late convert to Drag Race. I started watching last season.
And you wrote a great piece in the Square about it.
Yeah. I wrote about how I watched all of it
mm-hmm.
because I watched like one episode and I was like, this is actually great.
Yeah.
And like appreciated it in a way that like, because I was so turned off by drag and drag performance because it like made me uncomfortable.
In a live setting. Yeah.
From like when I was like coming out and was like weird about it.
Right.
But what I got out of it, and I think what I get out of like Queer Eye, is that it like makes you feel vulnerable and makes you feel okay being vulnerable.
Right.
So I think that's the major like inconsistency there, is that like he's being tested now himself by these like ideals of a changing generation, which he's like, look, like he came up in a time when like you had to be fucking hardened and like, you know, a workhorse, and not just to like break through in the way that he did, but he was also doing it when like people were dying.
Yeah.
So like he's coming it from this place, I assume, I can only project, that he's like, why are you not being like tougher about this, like find your own way.
I've heard him say, I've been on the front lines. I've heard him very defensively say
on Marin, he said that,
right. And he said it on his own podcast like a couple times when Michelle,
which you can't really argue.
No, look, I think that and that's what I'm kind of what I'm saying is, it's like, I just hope this leads to a productive conversation and not one that's like, you know what, fuck RuPaul.
Look, I think they're, yes, I agree with you. There's so much room for compassion here. People are getting very inflamed. Charlene, who's a Brooklyn drag performer, trans as well, wrote this long post about how she was getting worried that her comments, like her knee-jerk reaction to the whole thing, was like really just like angry. And then she was like, but wait a minute, I just actually want to contextualize all of this, because I love Rue. This is very disappointing, and that's why I'm reacting this way.
Right.
And she went into how when Rue was coming up, late 80s, early 90s, The sort of lifestyle was very hermetic. You just had to be, you had to just basically sit alone indoors for the entire, like, mm-hmm. just the entire day when daylight was out.
Yeah.
Just with like a fucking towel wrapped around your head and giant sunglasses, and you just had to like basically hide from the world.
Right.
And the only time you felt seen or appreciated was when you would go out at night, wear big fucking hair, looking like fucking fabulous.
Yeah.
And so it just, it what internalizes is this like this very precious,
yes,
valuation of what drag is.
Yeah.
And for Rue, like right now, seeing these things sort of be sort of opened up, she probably sees this as, she sees it as like a Pandora's box thing where it's like, right. wait, actually, let me just like contain this right. back to what I know and contain this into like a mental model of what I know drag is.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so that's why Rue is responding this way. And I understand it, but it also makes me upset and it disappoints me.
Yeah.
So everyone should read Charlene. That's just her Facebook name. Read that. Read this little post that she wrote. It's very, very, very balanced on all sides, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's disappointing.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
It's tough.
It's a tough one. Because also it's like, you know, at the heart of it is like, Rue, I think, wants to celebrate like like fun and frivolity,
right,
and like
yeah.
throwing off these chains, and it's like, but at the end of the day,
you're
like
still, there chains are being thrown at other people.
Yes, yeah. tough
totally.
Questions of identity,
right.
and then people, I don't blame anyone that's gonna feel hurt or disrespected or cast aside when that's happened their whole fucking life.
And that's as if to say like you couldn't intersect at fun frivolity with a trans performer or with a female cis female drag performer on the show, like fucking Peppermint. Like mm-hmm.
she specifically talks about Peppermint in the Guardian article, and talks about like the breasts forming, and that's when it gets weird. It's
well,
like she literally like talks about her physical body.
Right. Well, that's where Rue sort of like right. doesn't understand what transition
right.
means,
because then it's becoming like
a post-op thing.
Yeah, yeah, and like looking only at the surface level,
exactly,
like, not with the interiority that like I think he's missing,
exactly,
and understanding the humanity behind it.
Are you watching the season?
I am, yeah.
We're at that point now where it's like I don't, because
well that's so I appreciated in your last recap actually how much like the show, what I don't like about All Stars 3, I loved All Stars 2, I thought it was like
beautiful.
Some of the strongest fucking thing, like
yep.
but like this is too, it seems very obvious to me. I mean, last week obviously was like the curveball.
Yeah.
Which I think was dumb, but whatever.
Which is Bendela.
Yeah. I'm just yeah. like, get over it. Like, just you, I get, if you're tired, then you're tired, but just like, don't make it. I don't know.
You've got two whatever. More weeks of this anyway.
Also, fucking don't, Morgan McMichaels, give me a break. Come on.
For
she
sure.
threw a grenade back in the competition.
Yeah. But like, also, it's just like, I know who's, like, we, I can tell who's going to win because I can see like the talent on display.
Yeah.
Who
is that?
I think it's Shangela.
You think Shangela's going to win?
That's who I'm like, I mean, I was like, okay, are we just going to watch Shangela and Ben like win every fucking week?
Mm-hmm.
And like, where's the drama in that? And like, but I don't want the manufactured drama of a reality show where they have to bicker and fight to like play mind games to knock each other out.
It's,
I would just rather see RuPaul say, you go, you
yes,
stay.
Yes, 100%.
It's so mind-gamey, and yeah. I don't care for them strategizing.
It didn't feel that way with All Stars 2.
No, because, I mean, the
beef. It felt merit-based.
It right. felt merit-based.
I think maybe because there were more factions. There was, like, one specific faction
totally.
In All Stars 2 that carried over from that season originally.
Right, right, right.
But I ultimately thought, like, you could see, like, people were succeeding because they were great.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, totally, totally. It was, like, clear redemption arcs, clear victory arcs,
mm-hmm.
consistency, whatever.
I liked the first half of the season because it did feel merit-based. Like,
yeah.
Morgan leaving first, I thought was definitely right.
Right.
Then Thorgy, yeah, sorry, you didn't...
Then
it
milk.
Was fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Then milk, definitely. Like, it was your time.
I mean, I will say,
I
just want to say about milk, I want the unearned confidence of,
of that.
Don't we
yeah.
all?
To not only just think that I'm the shit, but also blame others for when I'm an asshole.
Yeah, it comes.
Like, I want to yeah. be able to tell someone who's like, how dare you not let me know I was being an asshole.
That's the issue.
That's yeah. just...
When she said...
I feel like I've gotten the shaft here
yeah.
by not being told I'm an asshole.
When she said, I feel like Alexis Michelle when they let her walk out in that outfit. It's like, wow. This is the kind of person who watched that episode and saw Alexis Michelle in that episode and was like, I identify with her.
I'm on her side. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Or saw
like,
that.
Can you imagine watching that and being like, Alexis is right. They should have told her to wear a better outfit on the runway so she could have won the challenge.
Right. I don't think it's Milk necessarily processing that way. I think Milk saw that episode of Untucked and then was like, wow, Alexis is fucking crazy. I'm not like that. And then going on All Stars 3 and being just like that.
Being right. Exactly yeah. like that. Okay, yeah, that's probably even worse.
Yeah.
But I think that confidence comes from being so attractive as a man.
Yeah. Oh, I sat next to Milk at Cats. Just to bring it back.
That's too much. That is too much.
Wow. Gorgeous. I mean, it's full circle. Yeah. It goes back to Cats. Milk would be a great...
He'd be a great Rum-Tum-Tugger. Yeah.
There you go.
Although he can't necessarily move sexy. He can model and be goofy. I thought Milk was actually really good.
Milk was great in Kitty Girls Challenge.
I mean, that's a low bar for me.
It wasn't enough for you.
It wasn't enough for you. Yeah, no. I mean, I get it.
The tics that he does, and I'm just like, I don't care.
Well, that's the thing.
The crying was so funny.
God,
so funny. But Milk is like is always like 70% there with what I think he's trying to achieve, mm-hmm. and never follows through all the way because you're like, wait, am I enjoying this because he's nice to look at? I don't know. That seems very shallow.
But that's also one of the reasons why it is enjoyable. You know what I mean? Like yeah, they know what they're doing.
Right.
Like that's why when it comes down to like, you know, Milk and someone else that's like less appealing, like even as a personality, they could come out there and give a better drag performance. But if they're a less appealing reality show contestant on a reality show, that does matter. And that's, I think... Like, I actually had a tweet. I was like, wait, you guys haven't watched Drag Race? Drag is for hot male models. Like, because that's honestly how it feels sometimes.
Okay.
Like, like when they cast the show, it's like, if Pearl was uglier than he is as a boy, have been in the top three. Yeah, and that's that.
Yeah.
And if you don't admit that, you are fucking crazy.
Yeah. Milk, the problem I have with Milk is that he knows he's so pretty, but like tries to show off that he is like
quirky,
awkward, like ugly side.
It's a very Anna Kendrick thing.
Yeah. And it's like, look at my gap teeth. Look at my big nose. And it's like, no. Like, I want, like, some of my favorite, like, Katya is one of my, I think Katya is like one of the most stunning.
She's fucking gorgeous.
Beautiful people in the world. And like, as a boy, attractive, handsome, but like, not like, Milk, like if Milk were to be Katya, like that would be like insane.
Yeah,
instead it's funny how that doesn't transfer.
Let me just put trash on my face and I'm a model. I'm editorial. And it's like, I don't care. Like, be something interesting. I don't know. Like, don't be interesting. Just be good at it. And I don't need it. It feels forced. It feels like, I don't know.
Because even when Milk came out in that glamour look, like he wasn't a gorgeous woman.
No.
You know what I mean? Like Katya comes out, and if Katya wanted to look like glamorous fish, she could.
Absolutely.
Like Katya's gorgeous. Right.
But like, I mean, like Alyssa, I think Alyssa's great.
Stunning.
And like the perfect fucking package because she's also crazy.
Kuka Luke.
And also, I don't know if you've... Like, you guys aren't Real Housewives.
I love Real Housewives.
I'm a neophyte.
When I started watching Dallas, I understood.
Okay, Dallas
Alyssa
I haven't
Edwards.
Watched. Oh, yeah.
That's the reference point. It's rich Dallas bitches.
Yeah, she says rich white women.
It is, it made me understand what Alyssa Edwards is.
Yeah, like literally like the
it's just like
Dallas.
Yeah, it's like, wow, like all like new money, but new Dallas money. So like they're all carnies and...
Yeah.
Former cheerleaders who are like really married into it and like are desperate to keep it.
Right.
That's why I like Real Housewives because it's new money.
New money.
During All Stars 2, when they did the pants challenge, Alyssa Edwards came out and she goes, I'm giving you rich white woman. Like, which is just so funny for her to say, I'm giving you rich white woman.
Yeah.
Like, as if she's been dressing up like something else the whole time. Like, this is a rich white woman.
It's subdued. You'd invite this one to a party during the daytime.
She's there to greet you, and that's
it. Yeah, daytime Alyssa. That's what it was.
Daytime Alyssa.
But she couldn't know. She didn't know that's what that meant.
Alyssa Edwards for All Time. Where's that reality show?
Oh, I know. They said World of Wonder, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like an online thing.
Dang. No, I say air, put it on Logo. There's no programming there.
I say absolutely put it on Logo.
Yeah.
I say literally make Logo for drag what like Bravo is for the Real Housewives.
Yeah,
like, I would be fine everything with that. On it. Yeah. Like you want to put Drag Race on VH1, sure, let that be its own thing. But you know, they are kind of trying to like Housewives eyes.
Oh yeah,
where they want it to be on all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's that's the other thing. This season, it's the episodes are too long.
Like, I love just it when too, they're long.
I do too. But like it's. Because I don't love the competition, it's like, this is a real struggle.
Oh, okay. So for season 10, though, right. You're going to be gagged because have you heard about...
Yeah.
90-minute episodes and then Untucked. Back on television. Yeah.
And here's the thing, and this is just me.
Yeah,
and
you are a curmudgeon.
No. But Tyler can relate to this, and I'm sure you even can, too, on some level when I say this.
You don't
this.
Have my relations.
Stop. Okay. So that just means every time there's a 90-minute episode, I'm like, all right, this is... 50% more writing I have to do on this fucking recap.
That's true.
If we're gonna write for season 10 about the whole 2 hours, including Untucked, like that is gonna be a lot of fucking writing.
Oh yeah, I'm down with it. Like, it doesn't bother me. I will just give a peek behind the curtain right now. For Drag Race, it doesn't bother me. I love writing about it. Thinking about it. I love watching it. I would rather it be my job.
Right.
With Top Model, I want to fucking kill myself. I want to bash my head into the wall.
It's a terrible show.
I mean,
there's nothing worse than recapping a show that you hate.
Yeah.
Like, and usually that's why I don't like to recap, because I usually hate shows.
Okay, give us an example.
I did some... This is an unfair example. I recap Looking the first season, which I turned in like 2,000 words for every 30 minutes.
Yeah, I get it.
Because I had things to say.
I had things to say about representation and interest.
Sure.
Which, looking back, I'm like, I was probably a little too hard on that bullshit show.
I think about that all the time, but I think it's important to do too much in those things.
But like, I was just like, this is... But what I learned from Looking, and I think I actually wrote a piece about this, is like, I don't need Looking the way that I thought I needed it, like maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. By the time I got a show that was about a boring white gay man who like isn't having the sex that he wants to be having, I was like, oh, I don't need this.
Yeah,
because I've spent my entire life like identifying myself in other people.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's easier. Yeah.
Did not need a mirror reflected on me because to just remind me that I'm boring.
That's part of...
That's all it was.
Totally. And this is something that I think people are rightfully bemoaning a little bit with this, like... I mean, it's great. It's amazing just having that representation and that being more widespread. But like part of the fun of like... being a queer person is just grafting your own narrative on things that just wouldn't normally call for that or normally reference that things that explicitly in your life.
That's interesting.
And so I don't know, but it's also great. Like Looking probably helped a lot of people, right?
I
learned what a bacchanal was because of Looking.
Did you learn what peri peri chicken was?
Oh yeah. And peri peri chicken too.
Yeah. Remember how that was like, insane. Like any time. What? Excuse me? You want to make what chicken?
I mean, look.
Peri peri.
Looking was... and looking...
Did you learn about eating ass from Looking?
No, absolutely not. But I did learn...
We both minored in that in college. Yeah.
Anytime I do... anytime I treat myself to a little fleet, a little enema, I do think about Jonathan Groff bending down and just letting the water slip down his colon. That scene of him just staring at the empty fleet bottle. I feel like that's like there were some educational moments in those scenes, and so I appreciate Looking for that. But I also completely understand you having that, you know, writing from that perspective at the time that it was airing,
right?
And you're sort of
my age.
Well, no, I'm just saying like you looking back on it being like maybe I didn't need it,
right?
Yeah,
I think also because I have regrets about that because I then was like at 4 parties where Jonathan Groff was around. I was like, oh fuck, I can never
go up to
that's
say
how
anything.
We feel about like Anthony. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Or and now I'm feeling a little self-conscious about all the Queer Eye guys because they're always on their stories now being like, hey guys, don't be a hater, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, oh, are they talking? Like, I feel like they're talking about
here's the thing.
I mean, yeah, I talk too much shit about people and I try to be nice now because you never know.
But here's literally a struggle I think about lately. Okay. Like, the whole center of this podcast is... talking about pop culture and we are who we are and
bitches.
That means that we're a little bit bitchy.
There you go.
Hashtag a little bit bitchy. But also like You gotta be. And also, it's all for fun.
It comes from a lighthearted yeah. place.
And it comes from a place of love. If we talk about anything on this show, right. it means we cared enough to talk about it.
Right.
And also, of course, we're going to talk about Queer Eye.
Right.
And of course, we're going to have reactions to it. So it's not hating. It's just talking about it. And that in and of itself is a celebration of it. However, I do sort of feel sometimes like, oh, man, like I really don't want to be like known as one of the gays that talks about other things. Like, yeah. And when I was first kind of, when I first moved to the city, like the first thing I did when I really got to NYU and I was trying to study journalism is I worked at the NYU newspaper and I would write reviews and features about the things that I saw. Mm. And I was just fucking 19, 20 years old. Right. I didn't know what I was doing,
yeah, yeah.
but I did know that I'd rather be on the other side of it. I was right. like, I'd rather create the work that people talk about. I don't want to be one of the people talking about it.
Right.
But now those lines are blurred because I do think it's very creative and I see what's so creative about, you know, being a part of someone who talks about culture. Like, I think that you're an artist. I think that, like, I think that what we do is, like, fun, and I think it's creative. But it's an interesting place to be, because when we did that, when we wrote that piece about Anthony, I was depressed for 4 or 5 days afterwards, and I was kind of thinking, like, why do I feel this way? Is it because I feel like...
you're not part of what's going on.
Not that. It's just that I don't want to be a critical, negative
right.
person.
That's how I felt after Culture War.
I was like, you know what? I also felt a little bad after Culture War.
Afterwards, I like in the cab ride home, I was just like, was I too mean about some people? Like, because I think because I'm not a performer, like I went through my very brief performance phase. It was like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm, I don't mm-hmm. like practicing. I want to show up, be amazing, leave, and just have everyone salute yep. me as yes, I go out yes. the door.
Gag the kids.
Which weirdly never happened. So not at the pit. So I was like really excited to do it. Yeah. And then there was a lot of pressure to like, because I was third, I had to match Joel and then
Michelle.
Okay, Michelle.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then also like,
we didn't think about that. I'm so sorry.
Oh no. This is all on me. And like then just like the structure of the show, like we're running long, so it's like I gotta be quick, I gotta be like, and I was just like, I gotta hit a joke at every single time, and I was like, I'm being an asshole.
No, that was a learning experience yeah. for us yeah. too.
We learned so much. Like right. obviously the first half was crazy long, right. and we were like, okay, we have to right. just like course correct. I think the next iteration that we do this, mm-hmm. I think we'll streamline things a little bit more. If you would like to be involved, I think we will get it right this time.
I'll produce.
I just want everyone to always know that Las Culturistas are always celebrating
right.
and are always positive. And that's what I love about I Don't Think So Honey, is even though I Don't Think So Honey is inherently negative, it is also primarily cathartic and celebratory.
Yes.
And I just want everyone to know that and feel that, because and I think I speak for you as well, want to be someone that makes people feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Anthony piece came out, and then like later on, we had some friends that like hosted the show
right.
at UCB where he did monologues at it. And apparently he like mentioned the Vulture piece.
Yeah.
And like playfully stomped his feet apparently and like said he didn't like it.
Right.
And that made me feel deeply sad.
I know,
because
it's hard.
Because I don't want anyone to ever feel bad as a result of something that we've done, unless they deserve it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Unless they've done something actually harmful or bad.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so that's just, I just want to make people feel good all
just
the time.
To, and just to go off of that, like my first like media experiences or just my diet mm-hmm. In terms of like people commenting on media, just in terms of the way that we think about it now, was through like this sort of triumvirate of Tyler Coates, Bobby Finger, Richard Lawson.
You mentioned this the other day.
Right, like just like those, like Sam Taggart and I have talked to you about this, mm-hmm. Tyler, a lot, about how we were just like, just would like meet up and like talk to each other about like, oh my God, those people are so cool because they're talking about all these different facets of pop culture in such a way that is like... Mm-hmm. I mean, like, sure, it's snarky sometimes, but also, like, at the end of the day, it's, like, a celebration. It's not, like, you don't reduce that down to, you don't distill that down to being, like, oh, well, they're being negative and mean and rude.
Right, right, right.
It was this, like, great moment. And so, yeah, sorry to bring that up.
I mean, compliment
but
me.
But how do you think about it? Like, do you think about that when you're talking about things?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I constantly worry. I mean, I think the reason why I was never performing, like, the way I performed online, basically, like, I
wrote in like a voice and a character in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think about that all the time, like how much of myself I'm putting out there. My boyfriend and I talk about it all the time because we've known each other for 10 years. We dated years ago in Chicago, and he like hated my blog post. Like he was just like, why are you friends? You're friends with people on the internet. I'm making air quotes because podcasting is a visual medium.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding everyone.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I pay attention.
You do.
Yes, you do.
And so he was just like, these people aren't your friends. Like, I'm like, well, I know these people, but I don't know them. And so it was very weird. And then when I moved here, I met people who I'd been internet friends with for a long time. I think they had expectations about me. I had expectations about them. Even just like becoming a writer professionally, I like freak out about it all the time. Like if I am constantly worried there's a conspiracy against me because I've like upset people from being like a dickhead 10 years ago. And like that'll keep me back. Which is just narcissism.
And you know what? That's what it is. It's narcissism. And no one thinks about it as much as you do.
I'm the kind of narcissist who thinks everyone's talking shit about him. No. But at least they're talking.
At least they're talking.
How fucking dare us think Anthony doesn't like the piece. He actively doesn't like us.
Tan and Jonathan and Karamo hate me and Bobby hates me. Yeah, it's terrible.
They couldn't care the fuck less. No. They're rolling in it. Yeah. They're also all fucking gorgeous.
But like there is this thing like, you know, if you put something out on the internet, like people are absolutely available to like see it.
Engage with you if they wanted.
Yeah, and like they can't like you see some celebrities like actually clap back at people, which is like refreshing in a way.
Sure.
But I don't know. It's just like it's also like all internet based, and so there's no like we strip the humanity out of it. And it's just like these personas like attacking each other.
Yeah. You know what it is too? It's I think some of those people that get clapped back at by celebrities are asking for that. And I feel like none of us are asking for that.
I mean,
we're not in this to engage with celebrities over this stuff.
No,
these trolls online, that's what I don't want to be grouped in with. Like I don't want to be one of these people that's like, let me say some shitty thing to Michelle Williams, the actress, and see if she tweets back. Like, let's call someone heavy online and see if they get upset. Like, can you imagine? Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad.
I mean,
bad.
Even when I write profiles of people, I am terrified that they will be like, fuck you.
Oh my God.
How dare you misread my entire life?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's, I mean, literally every time I publish one, I'm like, I have like a couple hours until I get
panic
a response.
Panic attack.
Yeah.
And in many ways, that is the most human of endeavors to really feel through someone else.
Who's been your favorite person to profile?
I wrote about Kyle MacLachlan for the Twin Peaks spin-off, which was really fun. I mean, I've never spent like 2 days with someone like, you know, skinny dipping together or whatever, and like we learned something. Like taking ayahuasca.
I think that's like on its way out, truly.
Yeah. Well, because no one can afford it. but I did, I did Kyle MacLachlan. I did Justin Vivian Bond and Kenny Melman when they did Kiki and Herb again.
Great.
Who, like, I mean, I love both of them so much. I love Kiki and Herb so much. Everett, I wrote a very early profile of her for Flavor Wire.
Oh, before, I didn't read that one. I remember that one.
Before Rock Bottom came out.
Wow.
So I'm kind of responsible.
You are responsible.
I'm not at all.
Everyone thank Tyler for Bridget Everett. I loved your New York, because didn't you open the Kyle MacLachlan profile with, like, him just greeting people?
Yeah, I was meeting him at Soho House. And so I was like, well, that's funny already because I'm going to Soho House.
Yeah.
Good
and
for you.
I was like waiting outside because it was early and he texted me just like an emoji, like a smiley, like crying face emoji and like a thumbs up. I was like, I'm on my way. And he like thumbs up me. And I was like, Kyle MacLachlan
uses emojis.
Uses emojis.
And he just gave you like an
emoji. And
approving.
He was like super friendly and, you know, handsome. And I was just like,
he's a star.
Yeah. You're amazing.
Seems like a great guy.
Let's just talk about David Lynch for an hour.
Who's
and they
been
bought
here?
Me a burrata.
Ooh,
Kyle MacLachlan did?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Who's been the biggest nightmare you've profiled?
I've never had, I mean, I had to write a Brooklyn Mag cover story for Ellen Page, and it was over the phone. So I had 45 minutes over the phone with Ellen Page on like 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning because she was on vacation.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, there's no way I can get anything good out of her.
Yeah, no,
so I had to like write Ellen Page as a cold and just be like, well, when you talk to a celebrity, you think you're cool. And like, actually it's not that glamorous because they're just on the phone.
I have an idea.
Whenever anyone
asks you that question again, I have a good answer for you to give. Say the green M&M. Because she's exactly what you think. Really stuck up.
Is that B.B. Newworth?
Is it B.B. Newworth?
I think B.B. Newworth is the voice of it.
I love that.
Oh, is she?
I think so.
Oh my God, she must be making a lot of great Mars bar money.
I'm really happy for her if she's making that
good
money.
Good for her.
Though. Okay, I think it's time.
I think it's time to move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
Yes.
And we've got a... We've got an expert in the forum with us. He's judged it. So.
Truly. I Don't Think So, Honey is our segment that we do every episode. And it's our 1 minute each to rail against something in culture that's really just bothering us. It deserves to be taken down. Mm-hmm. We should say that you should definitely come to our live show, I Don't Think So, Honey, Las Culturistas Live at the Bell House on March 16th at 8 p.m. We have a great lineup.
Amazing lineup. Okay, so I can go first. Do you want to go first?
I have a topical one. It is my birthday and I have a topical one.
And I have a topical one too, but would you like to go first since it's your birthday? You make the choice.
I'll go first.
Okay, so this is Matt Rogers's birthday. I Don't Think So, Honey. Topical. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Balloons. When I am in a room with a balloon, I have no idea what the fuck is going to happen. I don't know if it's going to stay floating, float to the ground, and if it floats to the ground, guess what? If I'm not looking and it hits a pin, pop, bitch. If a balloon pops, I will be so upset. If a balloon pops, it is shocking no matter who you are. I don't care. And you know, Las Culturistas listeners, that I do not deal well with the shocks. I Don't Think So, Honey. Sudden, loud noises. I Don't Think So, Honey. Horror films.
30 seconds.
So I definitely Don't Think So, Honey. Balloons. Let me tell you something else. Emotionally, balloons bother me because they signify a moment in my life when I was a young child and I went to TGI Fridays on an evening and my parents gave me a balloon for my birthday and guess what?
Seconds.
I let go of the balloon and the balloon went into midair and I stared at it crying. I will never forget standing in that parking lot watching the balloon go. So I Don't Think So, Honey. Balloons. You can pop,
5 seconds.
You can fly, you can never do anything right. I Don't Think So, Honey. Balloons.
And that's 1 minute. Wow.
Wow.
Amazing.
Balloons popping are the great equalizer.
Yes, everyone's shocked.
It's true.
Oh my God, you're right. You know what? I don't think so many balloons. Never give Matt a balloon.
I think that you would be hard pressed to tell me I think so, honey, balloons.
There is no greater anxiety in the world than a helium filled balloon that gets let go and floats outside and goes all the way up in the sky. That's fucked me up as a kid.
You
I was like,
what?
Where? I was like, where is it going?
Where is it going?
Do the thing where like everyone took balloons and sent them out, and like they had like notes attached to them.
No, that's
like
one
side.
That
is called littering. Actually,
thank you.
It's called littering.
Exactly what I was
gonna say. You know what? Hey, little kids, it's called littering.
I didn't come up with it.
No, you're littering the sky and the fucking earth because it'll fall down.
Yes, and I'll tell you one other thing. After a party, when all the balloons are on the ground, and you have to do that thing where you pick up the balloons and you kind of squeeze them to pop them. And you never know when enough pressure is going to be enough. So you're standing around like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And you really don't know when it's going to happen. Guess what? I have a really good life hack for that.
What?
Just get a pin and pop them like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would normally do.
Oh.
Okay. That was beautiful, Matt. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Okay.
And this is Bowen Yang's Matt Rogers birthday. This is so funny. I shouted out George Severus on this podcast and he just texted me.
Oh my God. Hi, George.
I'll tell him
love
you said
George.
Hi after. He's a wonderful new friend.
Great new
that
friend.
That we have. And everyone should check out George. He's a very funny stand-up.
So funny.
In the New York area. Okay, this is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Dear Basketball. What the fuck was that short animated film that won the Oscar? So that means Kobe Bryant has an Oscar, and we're going to give him that in the year of Me Too, which is so fucking ironic. It's disgusting. It is the opposite of delicious irony. It makes me want to hurl. I Don't Think So, Honey, Kobe Bryant, for obvious reasons, but I Don't Think So, Honey, Pamela Mackey, his fucking lawyer in Eagle County, Colorado,
30 seconds.
Who intimidated witnesses, intimidated the accuser so that she didn't testify in court, so the charges were dropped. Kobe Bryant is a fucking rapist pig. And that,
15 seconds.
That animated short sucks. It's a self-congratulatory letter, and it's a retirement announcement that, oh my God, it's so bad. Let me shout out the amazing other nominees. Garden Party, an amazing, amazing animated short.
And that's 1 minute. We will never hear the other ones.
That was the one that I wanted to get out the
most. That was your front runner.
Garden Party was for the front runner. Lou by Pixar was the close second.
I can't believe that one.
I can't believe that one. I can't. can't believe that one. The only person on Twitter who, like, appropriately, the only Twitter figure, I'll say, who, like, appropriately, like, was enraged at this was Roxane Gay. She was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes! Like, where? Why aren't the rest of us like this?
Roxane Gay gets wild on Twitter.
I love Roxane. Give me Roxane every day. I have to read her new stuff. Okay, Tyler. Yes.
That was brilliant.
That was good.
I think we've had two really good ones.
We've had two good ones. Shit. I think Tyler was telling me today, are you going to do what you said you were going to do?
Yeah.
I've
been like, this is the thing about I Don't Think So. And he's like, John and I do them if we run out of things to talk about. Like when we went to London and Paris, when we were in Paris and like could only talk to each other, we just were like, what else do we talk about? We've talked about the day. Okay. I Don't Think So, Honey. Go. Montmartre.
Oh!
I don't know. I love it. Yeah. It's a way to pass the time.
It's, yeah.
That's gorgeous. And you learn about each other.
But I haven't done it in a really long time, so I'm rusty. So I'm like,
it's okay.
But babe, nervous.
You're going to do it.
Okay.
This is Tyler Coates. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Jennifer Lawrence is so authentic. Bullshit. Number one, I believe that she tripped herself when she won that Oscar. No one can prove me wrong.
Oh, oh my God.
Just try me. Number two, she shouldn't have won that Oscar. It should have gone to Jessica Chastain. Miley Cyrus could have done the same performance. I walked out of Silver Linings Playbook. A white woman in Chelsea yelled at me for it, and I'm not over it.
Oh, 30 seconds.
Number four, I don't know.
Miley Cyrus.
Jennifer Lawrence. She said that she couldn't watch Phantom Thread. She turned it off after 3 minutes.
Ew!
Because, she's a middle school dropout. She's self-educated. Number two, she only did that because she's still mad that she broke up with Darren Aronofsky, and now he's dating someone younger than her, which I'm just saying, the writing was on the wrong there.
Five seconds, absolutely.
Don't date Darren Aronofsky. Watch a couple movies, bitch. I'm sorry, Mother was bad.
That's one minute. Okay.
I'm sorry, Mother was bad.
Miley Cyrus could have done Silver Linings Playbook is a true gag for you to say. I disagree. I do believe that Jennifer Lawrence was great in that film.
No, I'm so
she's
team
quirky.
Tyler on this.
She's quirky.
The whole scene, like, first of all, everyone has trouble. Well, I guess you could.
Said you like Jennifer Lawrence in that movie.
No, I've told you that I hated Jennifer Lawrence in that movie. Listen, here's the thing. Everyone has trouble pointing out, like, you know how every Best Actress movie, like, in the clip, mm-hmm. it's like, everyone has trouble picking out a clip for that movie. And it's not, it's either her going up to Bradley Cooper being like, so what if I'm a slut? I like that about myself. That mm-hmm. part. Or the other part is where she goes and, like, schools Robert De Niro and all these fucking Philly stats.
Right.
I can tell you the clip.
I didn't make it to that part.
But that just that whole scene, it's just so like you see the gears turning in her head.
The clip is he's harassing me. He's harassing me.
Miley would have done better.
No, she wouldn't have.
Yeah,
she gave a really good panicked, anxious performance there, and I think that it was performative because it was. The character was doing it on purpose because that's how she gets a rise out of people. And when she saw that, she saw herself in him and his reaction, I thought that was really good. And I thought it was a good romantic comedy performance. I'm an apologist for her.
My tell with her is that if you see her in an award show and she tries to read off a teleprompter, she has nothing to offer because she relies on editing and a director to tell her what to do. And usually he's telling her to play a 40-year-old.
I just want to say, her like holding a glass of white wine last night and like walking over rows of seats, I was like, her publicist told her to do that.
That's
walking
the thing.
Over what?
I'm just like...
She's like walking over rows of seats.
She's climbing over the seats.
She's climbing over the seats. And I'm just like, Jennifer... Come on.
One was in her way. It was an empty auditorium.
She was doing that just because she was on display. So I don't know. I mean, you know what? And we celebrate Jennifer because we celebrate culture.
I have not said anything negative about Jennifer. I can stand
unscathed. Trust me, I toned that one down a little bit after our last conversation. So it could have been worse.
I loved this.
Fabulous.
This was so fantastic.
The most cultured guest we've ever had on. Everyone else, this is confirmed.
Wow.
Everyone we've ever had on is garbage. Tyler,
thank you so much for having
me. Thank you, Tyler.
It was very fun for us.
Thank you
for being here on my birthday.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes. It's the gift that I could only give you.
Absolutely.
And how old am I? 19. Why do you ask?
Because when you're 19 and somebody tells you they love you, you're gonna believe it. And when you're 19, feeling like it, love is the world going on. Bye.
forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.